Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
This is the Herd, wherever you may be. However you may be listening, live in Los Angeles, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. For some reason, my IFB is not working. I have no idea why. John, is my things wrong? I don't know. The audience doesn't care, obviously. It's good to have you in on a Friday. I will make my predictions 1 hour from now for the championship games. We have Brandon Staley, new Chargers coach, who faced the Packers last weekend. Will be joining us today. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. It's Friday. We're here, and it's championship weekend.
It is. Let me start with this. I believe, as of today, the best team in the league is Green Bay. The second best team, as long as Mahomes isn't limping all over the place, is Kansas City. The third best team is Buffalo, and really close to the second best team. And the fourth best team is Tampa. Teams, Green Bay, Kansas City, barely over Buffalo, and then Tampa. I also believe if you held the MVP voting today, it would go in that exact same order. Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Tom Brady. We know it's a quarterback league, but more than any year in recent memory, this will be a quarterback weekend. You could say, whoa, what about Mahomes over Aaron? Mahomes is not 100% healthy. What about Josh Allen over Aaron Rodgers? He's never played in this game before. What about Tom Brady over Aaron Rodgers? Right now, athletically, age, it's Aaron. 9:02 Pacific, 2 minutes after noon on a Friday, Aaron Rodgers should win the Super Bowl and is the best quarterback. The other things to consider. This year, because we always know that quarterbacks matter, but this year we don't have a great defense to screw it up. We don't have the 2002 Bucks. We don't have the 2000 Ravens. We don't have the no-fly zone with Denver. We don't have the Legion of Boom 2013 in Seattle. Sometimes you may have the best quarterback, but a great defense screws it all up. We also, this year, have four what we believe to be B-plus to A coaches. Bruce Arians, B-plus, B to B-plus. Matt LaFleur has been an A in Green Bay. Andy Reid, Sean McDermott. So we don't have what we consider to be a massive coaching advantage or disadvantage to screw it up. We also don't have any team that's at a major deficit with weapons. Green Bay has got a great running back, good O-line. Buffalo's got Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, and Josh Allen, frankly, is their running game. Tampa, loads of weapons. Look around. Nobody's got a weapons advantage. So we have no huge coaching advantage, no huge weapons advantage, no huge defense advantage. And this morning, in order of quarterbacks, is to me in order of teams. So I think Green Bay should win it all. I think Green Bay is the best team in the league. When you take out a defense to screw it up, a coach to screw it up, or an asset, weapon, disadvantage, or advantage to screw it up. And by the way, there have been 10 playoff games this year. The best quarterback has won 9 of them. The only exception was that team up in Seattle, which we all kind of feel like the coach, we're not sure if he gets along with the quarterback. The Seahawks, Russell Wilson struggled second half of the year, reportedly interviewing Adam Gase. Not even sure why they do it. And if they did, why would you make it public? But I think we have a clear 4 best teams in order, Green Bay, Kansas City, Buffalo, Tampa, and that's this year, the quarterbacks as well. Let me go to this. So we know in the NFL, You know, every year we got seven new coaches, right? Some years eight, some years six, but it's about seven's your average. Yesterday, Philadelphia hired Nick Sirianni, who was not even the top coaching candidate on the Colts staff. This year was the year, in my opinion, of very interesting candidates and some really regrettable hires. Philadelphia hired a young man I believe they think they can control. Detroit hired a guy who I think sounds like a pro wrestler. The Jets hired a guy who many like, but can he solve their offensive woes with Sam Darnold? So we went back 5 years, and we went and looked at all the coaching hires for 5 years. How many end up being A's? So we went back to 2016. Doug Peterson, of the six hired, counts as the strongest. I know he was just fired, but Philadelphia won a Super Bowl. They beat Belichick. That's unfair to say he was a failure. 1-for-6 worked. The following year in 2017, seven coaches were hired, and it was a rare year where three were excellent. Sean McDermott of Buffalo, Sean McVay of the Rams, and Kyle Shanahan of the 49ers. 2018, eight new coaches, and only two are home runs. Frank Reich, Colts, Mike Vrabel, Titans. The following year, eight coaches again. Joy's shaking her head. A quarter of the league flushed out. Again, two home runs. Brian Flores of the Dolphins, haven't made the playoffs, but really doing a good job. Matt LaFleur of Green Bay. Now, Bruce Arians could make it three, but his first year was a losing season, and I ain't sure he's doing the work here. It's Brady. And last year, 2-for-5 so far appear to be excellent hires. Kevin Stefanski of the Browns, Ron Rivera of Washington. I think both had a ton to overcome, and one of the signs of a great coach is ability quickly to overcome chaos, bad quarterback play. Now, I do think Joe Judge has a chance in New York, but I can't say A. So this year, we have seven openings and six have been hired. And I'm going to tell you who I think the two, because that's the average, you just heard me, will be the hits. Brandon Staley of the Chargers. Why? It's a great roster, a sharp general manager, and Justin Herbert. This would be hard to screw up. He'd have to really not know what he's doing to screw it up. This is made to win. Anthony Lynn got fired, and he won a playoff game a couple of years ago. The second one, and I know you'll bristle, especially the media, Urban Meyer. He's a proven culture changer. He gets a great quarterback, a ton of cap space in a goofy division. And like Pete Carroll when he came out of USC, Urban Meyer will, for the next 3 and 4 years, be drafting players he had on his roster, he recruited, and he faced. I believe that is a massive advantage. Detroit, when's the last time they hired a great coach? Jets, offense is a mess. Did they really solve it? Philadelphia, cap issues, old roster, a head coach with no proven track record. My guess, Brandon Staley, Chargers, Urban Meyer, Jags. If you go with league average for the last 5 years, those will be the hits.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
If you're a Kansas City fan, you win the Super Bowl, and you feel great about yourself. And this year, you're not losing, right? You had one bad Sunday against the Raiders. I can see Buffalo beating Kansas City. It's harder for me to see Tampa beating Green Bay, although certainly possible with Brady. But here's a number that's scary. So 16 weeks of the NFL regular season, and then now we've had the bye week, a playoff week, another playoff week, conference championship, right? So week 12, that's a ways away, a couple months away. What happened in week 12, this is substantial. It's not week 3, it's not week 7, it's week 12, late in the season. This is kind of who you are, it's post-Thanksgiving. Kansas City's offense is 26th in the NFL in red zone. It ain't a talent issue. It's a they're settling for field goals a lot. Since that same week 12, Buffalo's defense is number one in the league in red zone. Meaning, they don't let you in. They're great situationally. These are real things, and they have been for 2 months. So I can see Kansas City moving the ball, controlling the clock, and feeling like the better team. And the Bills hit on two big Stephon Diggs throws and win the game. Kansas City led Cleveland 19-3. But because they didn't get into the end zone, they missed a field goal. It should have been 23-3 or potentially with a PAT 24-3, game over. But again, they had to settle for field goals, and that game was simply closer because of it. So that is a number that is not going away. Kansas City is not getting the push in the red zone to run the ball and get touchdowns. So when I say struggling red zone offense, great red zone defense, what's it tell you? It's going to be a lower scoring game than you would think, saying Josh Allen against Patrick Mahomes. Lower scoring game means nobody's running away with this game. It's going to be really, really close. The other thing, and this is not a small thing, the Patrick Mahomes toe issue. He's not going to be at 100%. Wasn't that first touchdown against Cleveland running into the end zone? He couldn't do that afterwards. So you're not going to get Mahomes' kind of viable running options in this game. It's very probable. Eliminate that. So the Chiefs aren't running the ball particularly well anyway. Now Mahomes can't move. You become a lot like Buffalo. Very pass-centric. Now they're great at it, but to me it says very close game. It spells upset. It screams upset. Is that how do upsets happen when you have Super Bowl champs and great teams? It's not the game happens and they're not great, but they don't capitalize on opportunities. Kansas City last weekend did not capitalize, even with Mahomes in the game, on some early opportunities. Field goal, missed field goal, and Buffalo's defense is significantly better than Cleveland's. Like, not close. So that's those numbers, if you're a Chiefs fan, you're gonna be settling for a lot of field goals in this game. A lot of them. And you may dominate time of possession, but you're not getting a lot of sevens. You're going to get a lot of threes, and that keeps it close. I don't think Buffalo's going to score a ton either, because I think their O-line's going to be a little overwhelmed in this game. All right, sad news to report, but we look back at an incredibly dignified career. Hank Aaron passed away at 86. I grew up watching Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron started his career in Milwaukee for a few years, and sports was not as mobile then. Then he played for Atlanta forever. The most amazing thing to me about Hank Aaron, he played for 23 years and was a 25-time All-Star. How? Because years and years ago, at the beginning of his career, they used to have multiple All-Star games. Hank made those too. Hank Aaron was a very unique player. He didn't strike out much. Surprising for a guy with over 500 home runs. If you took out his home runs, he still had 3,000 hits. But perhaps most impressive about Hank Aaron is that he passed Babe Ruth, a very iconic figure, for the home run record. I watched it live on TV. Everybody in America my age did. He got death threats. His children got death threats. A black man in the South threatening iconic Babe Ruth. Yet he handled it. Dignity, class, also was part of many civil rights activities. When I think of Hank Aaron, I first think of home runs. But secondly, I think of class. He was all class. Let's play it sound up. I remember watching this live. I don't know why I think it was on a Monday night. I don't know why I think that. They used to have Monday Night Baseball was a big deal. I don't know why I think it's Monday night. But here it is. Do we have it?
Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol.
Hank Aaron, all class.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So here are my picks. We don't do a blazing five. Let's start with the AFC.
Bills at Chiefs.
All right, I just told you, there's a disturbing trend for Kansas City. 26th red zone offense since week 12. Bills, number one red zone defense since week 12. Tells me it's going to be a fairly low scoring game. And it tells me there's a real possible upset. That Kansas City just settles for field goal and field goal and field goal, and Buffalo sneaks in the end and win. Here's why I like Kansas City. Number one, the last time they played, Kansas City rushed for 250 yards. Buffalo had 80. The Bills only averaged 64 yards rushing this year in the playoffs. That's half of everybody else in the playoffs. They are a very one-dimensional team. I also like the fact that not only is Kansas City at home, but they have the most combined playoff experience of any of the playoff teams. The Bills have the least. I'm going to take Kansas City to win 28-23. I don't feel terribly strong about it. I think there is the potential for an upset, but I'm going to take Kansas City to win at home, more experienced. They have at least a semblance of a running game. But that red zone stat, I can't get past it. It's a real thing. I think this game's going to be lower scoring, potential lousy weather too, than people think. Meaning, we could have a 24-20 game here, and everybody's going to be biting their nails in both cities. Let's go to the NFC.
Buccaneers at Packers.
All right. Green Bay, I think, is the best team left. They've had a different leading receiver in each of their last three games. So they're balanced throwing the ball. They had 188 yards rushing against the Rams, the most in a playoff game in the Aaron Rodgers era. So now Aaron's got his best rushing offense. I think they have the better offensive line. Aaron Rodgers, by the way, is very rare. You get all the upside with 11 total giveaways this season. That includes the playoffs. They just don't give you opportunities. How good teams often lose and better teams often lose is wasted opportunities or turnovers. They don't do either. They're the number one red zone touchdown offense in the NFL this year. They don't waste opportunities like Kansas City. They don't turn it over. And they dominate time of possession, number one in the NFL. So Brady's the way you lose. He won't get the ball much. Packers win. It's the game I'm betting. It's a three-point spread. I think Green Bay wins and covers 33-26. I'll take Kansas City with no conviction, none, and I'll take Green Bay with lots of conviction. For the record, my favorite bet last week was Green Bay over the Rams. Rams came hobbling in, and I just said I struggled to see how they could win. AB is out for Tampa. That is not a helper. That he created, if not, you could use him as a decoy, and he was advantage. AB has become a real part of the offense in the last month. He's out. Doesn't help. He had a good game against Washington, some nice plays last weekend as well. All right, so one of the things, I've seen a lot of this in my life, in my broadcasting business. It's a mistake that a lot of people make. You hire somebody, it doesn't work out, and then you overcompensate as a company and you go the opposite way. I think the Jets hiring Robert Saleh, he may work, but he's the opposite of Adam Gase, and there had to be something you were attracted to Adam Gase about. Gase was moody, dark, didn't communicate, low energy. Robert Saleh is the opposite. Detroit did the same. Matt Patricia, kind of heavy set, more of a brainiac, not real. And they went and got a pro wrestler in Dan Campbell. James Bond did this. You remember it was Pierce Brosnan, who was very gadgety. very, very gadgety and finesse. And then they went out and got Daniel Craig, and he's running through fences. And that doesn't mean that the James Bond wasn't great with both, but they did, but they said, okay, this is here. We're going to go the opposite way. And I've seen companies do this my whole life. And so when I watched Detroit yesterday, I was taken back, Dan Campbell's press conference, I was taken back by, they just went and got the opposite of Matt Patricia. And my takeaway is, well, there was something about Matt Patricia you liked, and it was probably that he's really, really smart. And so here was the Dan Campbell press conference, and I do believe press conferences and your first press conference for a president, I thought Biden's inauguration speech was very strong. He kind of set the tenor of the presidency, whether you like him or not, voted for him or not. I thought it was very strong. And Adam Gase's first press conference, not good. Here was Dan Campbell. I don't think this is great.
And so this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth. All right. And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right. And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right. And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap. And we're going to get up, and then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right? That's going to be the mentality.
I just do not believe if you take the five or six best coaches in the NFL, that would look like their press conference. Sean McVay, Bill Belichick, Sean Payton, Andy Reid would not be talking about biting kneecaps. I think if you look at the great coaches of all time, Don Shula wouldn't do that. Jimmy Johnson, Bill Walsh, Belichick wouldn't do that. But things happen. But I do think when you hire a new coach, you should make corrections, but not overcorrect. And it felt like they wanted a player and an alpha and a tough talking and a big energy guy who was the opposite of Matt Patricia. And I thought it was a miss. Maybe I'm wrong. And I'll say it again, press conferences do matter. There was a guy named Howard Dean. People thought he had a chance to be president, and then this happened.
Not only are we going to New Hampshire, Tom Harkin, we're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. We're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Yeah! I'm not voting for him. Press conferences matter.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Brandon Staley, in his 30s, is the new football coach of the L.A. Chargers. He was the Rams' defensive coordinator, mostly considered a long shot for some of these jobs. And after the interview, he gets Justin Herbert. He gets this Chargers roster, which is significant. And Brandon Staley is now joining us live. Well, you know, we're talking about, first of all, congratulations, Brandon. Good for you. Congrats.
Thank you, Colin. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So let's talk, as a former Rams coordinator, just a couple weeks ago, you're facing Aaron Rodgers and you're facing Aaron Jones. And one of the things that kind of jumped out to me, they're so multiple. There's so much motion now with Matt LaFleur. So if I'm Todd Bowles in Tampa this weekend, you pick your poison. What do the Packers do as a defensive guy that is just really difficult to defend?
Yeah, they're really balanced, Colin. I think that they have a really, really good offensive line, and their tight ends really serve as extra elements of that. Mercedes Lewis, Robert Tonyan, those guys are really good players. And when they play three wide receivers, Alan Lazard, he's almost like another tight end. And then they've got three runners that really come at you. Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, A.J. Dillon. You know, you always have somebody fresh in the game. And I think that that really helps out Aaron, not that he needs a lot. And when you're operating at the level Aaron's operating at right now, there's very few that can reach that level. But when they're running the ball like that, it just makes Aaron more difficult to defend. And we all know about Davante Adams, one of the elite players in the league. And I think what Aaron's done is he's elevated all those other receivers. He's found a comfort zone with them. You know, Scanlon can take the top off. You know, Lazard is somebody he trusts. And then Devontae's as good as it gets. So But, you know, it starts and ends with Aaron. And when he's playing like he is now, makes it difficult.
So when you faced him with the Rams, it was tough because Aaron Donald was not at 100%. In the first game where Green Bay struggled with Tampa, Brandon, they got pressure on Aaron, and sometimes not blitzing, sometimes they did. Was it your belief when facing Aaron that you bring extra people, or did that give you discomfort that then you have a hole in the back end? Would you blitz against Aaron? How much confidence did you feel doing that?
You know, I think this guy's got the quickest trigger in the game, and I think especially on early downs, Colin, I don't know if that's a winning solution because the ball comes out so quickly. So I think that when you know, when pressure can get to Aaron is more on third down, or if you have the lead and they're having to drop back to come back, I think that that's when, you know, that's a better solution. Because on first and second down, this ball is out quickly, whether it's in the RPO game, whether he's an empty, you know, that's one of the things that makes him so difficult is that he's difficult to pressure on early downs. And as you're aware of, he takes care of the football as well or better than anyone in the history of the game.
Yeah, you get all the upside. We were talking about the late Hank Aaron. You got the home runs without the strikeouts. With Aaron, you get the great plays. You don't get the turnovers. So it's those are once in a generation players. Now, Kansas City's favored over Buffalo. I watched, when you were coordinator of the Rams this year, I watched the Rams-Buffalo game. They came out, jumped on you. You made adjustments, and Brandon, your defense had a very good second half. So Josh Allen, when you face him, huge arm, also moves. What issues, what did you do in the halftime to make the corrections? Because you shut the Bills down in the second half.
Yeah, it took us a little bit in that rhythm to get into a rhythm early in that game. And then after halftime, Colin, I think what we did a lot better job of is we knocked the run game out. And, you know, as you know, he's so special throwing it, and it sounds, you know, counterintuitive, but if you don't knock the run game out against players like Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers and you give them a two-way go, then you got no chance. You have no chance to be successful. So we were able to knock some of that run game out, and then, you know, then some of our pass rush and our pressure stuff were able to get to him, and then we turned him over in that second half twice, and that really tilted the momentum of the game. And, you know, we gave ourselves a chance to win in the fourth quarter.
Not only a chance to win, you get kind of a bad call. You should have won that football game. We don't need to talk about it, but it was a bad call.
that was a great game. And I really felt like, cause I've three out of the four guys still playing. We've played those guys and, you know, Josh, just so much respect for him, but you know, we felt like we had a good enough team to go a long way.
So you did have some success against Tom Brady. Brandon Staley joining us, the new Charger coach. Tom is not, their run game has been a little hit and miss. Ronald Jones is very explosive. Tom's not going to move in the pocket. But Tom challenged you as a defensive coordinator with the Rams because he can do so much pre-snap. He's a wizard back there. So what will Green Bay's defense face that really is frustrating when you face Brady?
I think the command pre and post snap, there's just not a look that you're going to give him that he hasn't seen. And I think, you know, we caught Tom, I think, at a good time. It was at the, you know, that midpoint of the year where I don't think he had really settled into a rhythm with that offense. And I think what you saw over the last five games and then moving into the playoffs is, you know, he's found that comfort zone. He's found that rhythm and that timing with his skill players. And as you're aware, that skill group is as good as there is, you know, that we certainly face during the season. It's deep, runner, receiver, tight end. And I think that, you know, what makes Tom so difficult is that he sees the field as well as anybody in pro football. And he's as an accurate of thrower inside the numbers as anybody that's ever played. And, you know, and then he's such a clutch player. And, you know, that's why this game is going to be really fun to watch this weekend.
So you take the Chargers job. I will be the first to admit, I thought it surprised me. I thought you were going to be a viable candidate. People spoke well of you. And so congratulations. You're a former college quarterback at Dayton, by the way. The Flyers, very good school, by the way. In fact, is Dayton a private school? Is it?
Yeah, Marion is school, Catholic.
Yeah. It's very good. I know this. I got a lot of kids, Brandon. They're going to colleges. They wanted to apply to Dayton. But when you took the Chargers job, even though you're a defensive coach, you had to – part of the attraction had to be Justin Herbert, who was shot out of a cannon last year – was tapped on the shoulder before the Mahomes game with the Chiefs. I would have been so nervous, walked in, went toe-to-toe. How much of it was, oh, my Lord, I can get Justin Herbert.
You know, I think anybody that's interested in football, Colin, you know, knows that the quarterback position is so vital to your success. And I think what was exciting for me, Colin, was being at the beginning of his football journey. I think that that's equally as exciting to be with a young quarterback at the beginning of his career. And I think as a defensive coach, former quarterback, I think seeing the way he expressed himself this year, you know, global pandemic, no offseason, no training camp, no preseason, for him to play the way he did this year. And I thought, you know, something that I was so impressed about was just the way he played in 2 minutes. I think the special quarterbacks in the league play their best at the end, you know, when you got to have it, when you're behind, or, you know, it's that end of game, 2 minute situations when you got to have it. And I thought he just showed command, poise, precision, and, you know, certainly to be, you know, partnering up with him at the beginning of his career, you know, that's so exciting.
You know, Brandon, the good news, bad news. The good news is you actually got the best job available. And one of the reasons it's the best job available, you've got a really good roster. I think the offensive line needs to be cleaned up a little bit. Now, the bad news is you're not going to be given a ton of time here. The Chargers have a history of being patient, but this is a good football team. This football team can win now very quickly. Do you sense that pressure?
You know, Colin, I think you just have to look at each circumstance as it has a life of its own. And I think there's high expectations for, you know, the NFL, no matter what team that you play for or you compete with. And I think what the great competitors do, Colin, is they're not worried about anybody else, you know. And I think that was certainly my mindset going into this opportunity is, you know, my full focus is on the Chargers and for us to get with these players, to start the relationships that are so important and then get to the competition of working with these guys at their game, you know, developing identities in all three phases of the game, you know, bringing our building together, you know, creating a clear vision and then a process and how to get there. And I think, you know, you talked about the players that we have and that's what's so exciting. But the key to winning in the NFL is becoming a team. And that's where our focus is going to be. And I can't wait to get started with a lot of the players that you are fully aware of.
Yeah, it's a really, really good roster. His name is Brandon Staley. He was a very young coordinator. A lot of people say he's the McVay on the defensive side. We're crossing our fingers. Brandon, absolute pleasure. Good luck to you. Say hi to Tom Telesco, one of the sharp guys in the sport. Thanks, man.
Will do, Colin. Nice to meet you. Have a great day.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Eric Mangini, 3 Super Bowls with the Patriots. He's been in a lot of these games before and a lot of them with Tom Brady, and he is now joining us live. I mean, okay, let's just talk Brady as he takes on the Packers. You've been in a lot of these games with Tom. Is the preparation different, just a little more intense, or is Tom the same in week 2 as he is in the Super Bowl?
No, the intensity from everybody is up to each level that you go. It's hard though to up Tom's intensity because he's been pretty consistent. The thing about Tom is just the confidence level that he gives everybody else because he's there, and. Even with a new organization, I'm sure that's permeating through the team. But for us, you knew no matter what happened, as long as you gave him another chance, as long as you held up your end of the bargain, odds are you were going to win. And I'm sure this is the reason they brought him in, right? He goes into the phone booth, he puts on his cape, and, you know, comes out and figures out a way to win the game.
You know, it's funny. Through the years, I've talked to players who talk about this. They say that a great quarterback makes your defense better because, to your point, defensive players feel like, let's just give our guy one more shot, one more drive. Did you feel, when you were on those Patriot staffs, that there were times that Tom elevated, there was a sense that just get him the ball back, get him the ball back? Did you coach different? Did you sense that as a coach?
Well, what it does is it doesn't take the pressure off, but it allows you to go to the sidelines and exhale a little bit and talk through what the problems are, because you have the confidence to know that if you do take care of what you're supposed to take care of, odds are he's going to go down and win the game. And that's rare. I've been in plenty of situations where you're trying to win the game because you have no confidence in your quarterback whatsoever. It's just the opposite. It does allow you to relax because of the faith you have in him.
It's interesting. Tampa Bay made Aaron Rodgers very uncomfortable in their first meeting, and he really unraveled. I don't know if they can do that again. If you recall the game, was it schemes? Was it matchup issues? But to me, the first matchup, Tom was comfortable. Aaron was not as comfortable. That's what I saw.
Yeah, that's exactly what the case was. I went back and watched the game and trying to figure out how they had that explosive second quarter. They had the 28-point second quarter like the Browns had in the first quarter against the Steelers, and it was exactly that. They were finding ways to get to Aaron Rodgers, to disrupt his timing, to make him feel uncomfortable. And he has two uncharacteristic interceptions and one for a touchdown. And then you flip it, and you're watching Tom, and they're dropping eight, and they're very rarely getting to him. There's little pressure up the middle of the offensive line, which is what affects him the most. And then not a lot of man-to-man coverage. I think they're going to have to mix in some tight man-to-man coverage so that he has to force the ball into small windows, and they're going to have to pressure him through the middle of the pocket if they don't want what happened last time to happen.
All right, Kansas City, Buffalo. Patrick Mahomes just told reporters he has cleared concussion protocol. So Patrick Mahomes is good to go on Sunday, which is good news and kind of what everybody thought. We worry more about his toe. I want to start with the Buffalo side. Buffalo's an underdog. They're on the road. What would you be telling Josh Allen in this matchup against the world champs?
Here's the thing that concerns me the most. I hear this comment about we've got to chase points a little bit. We've got to match their points. I think that's the absolute wrong approach to take. Josh Allen is already going to be pressured up. You don't want your guy to look like he's over-caffeinated, and you don't want to have him think that he has to take chances to win the game. That's where he's going to get in trouble. If anything, you want to run the ball, obviously more than they did in the first half last game. Get some of those quarterback-driven runs, easy completions. Throw a few of those screens because Kansas City is going to try to light them up. But don't go into the mindset of we've got to chase points, because that's where you make huge mistakes. And the game inevitably comes down to 3 points or something totally different than you thought going into it.
You know, Kansas City's interesting. Mahomes has a little bit of a ginger foot, and they have really struggled in red zone offense, Coach. 26th in the NFL in red zone offense since week 12. You get to a point, that's now who they are. That's not a game. That's not a weekend. That's who they are. I mean, you can go back to some of your Patriot teams. Is that about the push, the lack of running game? I mean, that's a real thing when you have all those weapons, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, and you're bad in the red zone. You settle for field goals. What does that tell you?
Well, one of the things that you do get to do in the red zone is you get to double team players, and you have a lot more bodies compacted into a much smaller space, and then you're able to use the back of the end zone as well. So they can make things cloudy. You can do a lot of various combination coverages, whether it's on Kelce, whether it's on Hill, whatever you want to do, and that can be problematic. And usually, teams that can run the ball and run the ball with some power can go to that in the red zone and will often go to that, and then that complements what you want to do in the passing game, and it really hurts the combination coverage. Kansas City, that's not really how they're wired, and I'm sure that's led to some of the problems that they've had.
All right. I got a couple of questions. The Eagles hire a young coach that was not even a top candidate 3 weeks ago. And it does feel like, to me, it's a coach the GM, the strong-willed GM and the owner can control. What do you make of Sirianni getting the job in Philadelphia when his name wasn't even popping up 3 weeks ago as a coach?
Well, there's a couple things here. They obviously like their previous offensive coordinator. They can't get him, so they go get the guy that he's trained and who Carson Wentz has had a lot of success with. And Colin, I think there's a real Ryan Tannehill effect going around the league where you don't want to get rid of your guy. You don't want to give up on your guy too early because you don't want him to go somewhere else and play well. And so the idea is let's go find a way to fix this. Who gave us the most success? Try to get someone from that family tree. And you're right, too. When you get a young guy, he's not going to fight you on the decisions of personnel. He's not going to fight you in the draft room or in free agency. And I'm not saying fight in a major conflict way, but you tell him what to do, he's going to do it. He's happy to be there, and you're hoping that he can somewhat fix the problems that Wentz has had.
I want to go back to Bruce Arians and Tom Brady. Arians said last week, you know, I let Brady coach. You know, they didn't do that up in New England, but I let him coach. What was your takeaway on that?
It's a couple things. I mean, you're going to criticize an organization that has 6 Super Bowls. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I agree, you should have let him coach earlier. And one of the issues I had was his greatest strength is his mind, and you're forcing him to learn a new system and not taking advantage of that early on. Yeah, let him coach. Let him do the things that he does really well, as opposed to forcing him to do something else. And if you had done it earlier, you know, who knows? You might have had a different seed.
Yeah, you'd be playing in Tampa, not Lambeau this weekend.
You'd be playing in Tampa, and exactly.
Finally, you know, people think I don't like Baker. Not true. I am a lover, not a fighter. But I will say this. A year ago, I mean, Baltimore's already said, we're signing Lamar. Buffalo's already said in a couple of weeks, couple of months, we're signing Josh Allen. A year ago, Cleveland, despite Myles Garrett having a pretty ugly situation in a game, they re-signed him to an extension. Yet here's Baker with a playoff win, and Andrew Berry, the GM, says, well, we thought he matured a lot. And I thought to myself, well, Baltimore's going in on their guy. Buffalo's going in on their guy. Philadelphia went in on Wentz early. Patrick Mahomes got a deal early. Why isn't Cleveland giving a Baker? Why aren't they signing Baker to an extension now?
Well, he has matured a lot, and I've liked the fact that he's matured a lot, and he started to see that after last season. But you want to make sure that it's not just a blip, not just a little bit of a trend, that it's really who he's going to be, because you're talking about a significant financial commitment. You're talking about a long-term marriage, and now they've got a chance to go back, really assess how the whole season went. And in any organization, there's a lot of stuff that goes on that never gets out. And we don't know, you know, everything that took place and their overall evaluation. So there may be some apprehension to really commit to a long-term marriage.
Yeah. All right. I'm not trying to start anything or rile anything up. It's just,
no, you would never do that.
No, I'm just a journalist. Just come in with straight facts. That's all
yes,
I do.
Yes.
Eric, have a great weekend. Good talking to you.
All right. We'll see you, Colin.